Welcome everybody to the Haunted Vermont podcast. My name is Paul Dolsky, and joining us today, we have a awesome guest that you have probably seen his work throughout Vermonter.com or some of the books that he has published, I'm assuming under the Vermonter Publishing Company, and he can go into more of that as well. But anyway, without further ado, everybody, please welcome Bill Alexandria.
Well, thank you for having me. I certainly appreciate being invited.
Hey, you're very welcome, Bill. Now, before we dive into like the weird and mysterious beyond, as I like to call it, but so I guess my question to start this off is just a little bit of, tell us a little bit about yourself. So in that respect of, as in like, what really kind of got you into the unknown factor? Like, did you have an experience of your own, or did you hear these great stories and that's where you wanted to kind of help keep these stories alive, as you kind of do with, you know, your Vermonter.com?
Well, to begin with, I was born, brought up in Vermont from many generations ago. And, you know, I kind of heard the stories passed down from generation to generation, which even as a little kid, I found them somewhat fascinating. And later on in life, as I kind of was going to school and everything, I was reading a lot of books and actually wrote my first little short story and submitted it to a contest with the Burlington Free Press many years ago, back in the 70s, and was surprised that it got published. It was, looking back on it now, it was, it looked like something a 16-year-old kid did, and still does. But that's kind of how I got started. And later on, when the internet was born, and or more or less was more publicly used, I decided to create a site called Vermonter.com, which was at the time more of a showcase for the Northeast Kingdom, but kind of evolved into the things that kind of interested me, one of which was ghost stories and folklore and that sort of thing. So I guess in a nutshell, that's pretty much what's brought me to the point I'm at now.
Oh, that's really cool. And you've been doing this for, I want to say, what, since 1996?
Well, matter of fact, the Vermonter.com website was, I just totally renovated it for the 25th anniversary. So yeah, it sounds like back around that time. So yeah, it's been 25 years, believe it or not.
Well, happy anniversary for Vermonter.com.
Oh, thank you.
You're very welcome. So, Bill, so explain the, you know, the process a little bit. Did you hunt down these stories that you added to the site a little bit, or did people, or should I say, like, visitors that went to your site, like, submit it to you? I know, like, you know, we all know Joe Citro as well and stuff, but in this factor, like, how were you collecting the stories, I guess?
Well, I mean, before when I discovered Joe's books, I mean, that was like that was like the fountain of dreams, I guess, when I found all of this material all in these books, and it was just presented so fantastically by Joe. And that years ago was a big part of thinking, well, you know, I want to look into this a little bit more. So as I developed Vermonter.com, I was meeting people and going into other towns and hearing things. So I thought, wow, this is kind of cool. So, and another one was Scott Wheeler from the Newport area. He also has a lot of good historical stories, though he does tend to shy away from the ghost stories. He thinks it's a lot of bunk. But he has a lot of good, unusual history that has gone unexplored. So he's been an inspiration, and he's also been a very good colleague. We kind of collaborate back and forth. He lets me use a lot of his stories and so forth, and then sometimes I dig a little deeper into them and expand upon what he provides. Fame with Joe, and also a shout out to some other people in the area, like Chad Abramowitch, who has some equally fantastic stories to share on his blogs and website. And so again, we are all in this kind of a strange network. We kind of collaborate back and forth and share notes and drink coffee and all that fun stuff. And yeah, it's nice to share this with people with a common interest, I guess.
Yeah, and that's the thing with Vermont, I find, is we really do tend to like the spooky side of Vermont, as I may say, because we're always interested to, if I may say, like, learn more and actually visit the places as long as they are allowed to visit. Like, I know with some of these haunted locations nowadays, you know, it just takes one person to really ruin it for everybody else. Which a good example would be like Emily's Bridge. What was it, back in 2014-15, I think it was, is when they did the curfew on that place, and that if the police saw you over there after dark, that they would fine you and everything else.
Exactly. And unfortunately, there seems to be a lot of that sort of thing. And especially talking with Chad about his urbexing, what kind of started out as a sort of a thing where he's exploring places. He's kind of on the shady side of, you know, maybe I'm trespassing, but maybe I'm not, but in such a way that he's not being intrusive. But yet he said that he kind of started backing away from it because too many people were then going to the extremes. And a good example is the Air Force Base in New Haven, where they were reading about his work, and then people were coming from out of state and going up and trashing the place and having parties and doing all sorts of awful things. And yeah, that's really a shame that sort of thing is going on. I mean, there's a lot of fascinating stuff out there, and if people would just appreciate it. And another one is the Hyde Manor in Sudbury. Chad and I actually stopped there one day. We wanted to take some pictures, and we asked the owner, and she was, I wouldn't say angry or anything like that, but she was kind of irritated the fact that she said people just stop there all the time and they trespassed on the property. And we're like, well, you know, we don't want to do that, which is why we're asking. But she said, well, you know, I really would rather not let you on there to take pictures. So off we went, but there have been other people who have really taken advantage of her and trespassed and everything. So she's somewhat hostile towards that. And I can understand it. So I guess if that's the one thing I want to get across to everybody is, you know, it is private property. So, and some of these places where these stories take place, I mean, I had somebody on my Facebook group wanting to know what haunted places they could go and explore and see ghosts. It's like, well, you know, it's not Disneyland. It's a concept more than anything. So, you know, you got to respect other people. So if I can get anything out there, it would be enjoy the stories, explore if you want, but only to the extent of you have permission or you're not trespassing or interfering with others. And, you know, that way it keeps it open for all of us to enjoy, I guess.
And I'm going to back that 100% of what you just said, because in that case, Bill, as you probably know, with abandoned places, that it will lead to the destruction or demolition of the building or whatever it is. And then, you know, then that piece of history is gone forever. So even though, like, Hyde Manor, as you said, is still somewhat standing, even though it definitely has looked like it's seen better days, though. But the fact that it's still standing, as far as I know, you know, that's a plus at least. But I mean, eventually one day it will need to, you know, be demolished or something.
Yeah, it's in pretty rough shape now, and last I heard, a huge section of it is collapsed, so it's in really rough shape. But, you know, number one, you know, people shouldn't be poking around to the point where they're probably going to get hurt. And no. Number two, it's, you know, just pissing off the owner is not cool. So,
And to bring up another story that I talked with another friend of mine on the show here, we were talking about Honto's Cave in Chittenden, which that also lands on private property. And because of people going to party, graffiti, the rocks, and this and that, the owners there don't even want to be associated anymore. They don't want to be asked. They just want to be left alone. So, yeah. So that's a shame because I've never had the privilege to really see Honto's Cave. So now I don't think I'll ever get a chance to. So.
Exactly. And that's what's a shame. It really is.
Yeah. And so I guess continuing forward, Bill, is like, I know I kind of asked it to begin with, so I guess I'll just go back to the question, but have you ever experienced anything, or has anybody that you've been around ever, like, experienced anything, whether it be with you or without you?
Well, you know, that's the thing. I'm kind of like Fox Mulder on the X-Files. I want to believe. but I haven't. Honestly, the only thing that even remotely comes to my mind was many years ago. I think I was 12 years old and my grandmother passed away, and I was out in Wyoming at the time, and her bedroom was across from where I was sleeping, and I could have sworn I saw like a shadowy figure that looked like Abraham Lincoln sitting on the foot of her bed. And I always kind of dismissed that as maybe I woke up in the middle of the night and was having a dream or whatever. But then later on, after my grandmother passed away, I overheard my mother and my aunt, I think it was, talking, and something about when my grandmother was in the hospital, she kept saying, "Get that man off the foot of my bed, tell him to go away," and there was nobody there. So that kind of freaked me out a little bit, thinking back on what I thought was probably a dream when I saw her that night, when I thought that Abraham Lincoln or somebody with a top hat was sitting at the bottom of her bed. So that's really the only thing whatsoever. Beyond that, I have never seen any evidence. I've never seen, heard anything. So I'd like to believe it, but until I do, I remain skeptical, I guess, somewhat. But I love the stories.
Yeah, and that's completely fair. I mean, I used to be skeptical, too, before I had my own experience, which made me question reality in a way, probably like you're trying to say, too. Like, did I really see that? And, like, et cetera, et cetera. But I guess in this case, have you actually ever went back per se and like dug into any research of the history of the building or anything? Like, would your grandma ever was she like a relative that maybe could have been part of where Abraham Lincoln could have been, if it was Abraham Lincoln?
Well, I don't think it was Abraham Lincoln. I think it might have been some, if it were a ghost, a period of time or something, that when they wore top hats or something like that. But it never really, you know, it never really obsessed me to the point of really digging in more. I just kind of, over the years, have passed it off as a sort of a coincidence sort of thing. So.
Yeah. And that's all fair as well. So I guess, Bill, is like, I know you're trying to keep the stories and et cetera alive. So you've also, as you mentioned, you have like a Facebook group and stuff like that. So what is your Facebook group? And is that like, you know, basically, as you're saying, where people can come in and share their stories and, I don't know, bring evidence or something like that?
Yeah, it's called Haunted Vermont Ghosts, Myths, Folklore, and Legends, and it's a group where I basically allow people to go in and share experiences and things like that. It does tend to, I did shut it down for a while because it was kind of getting out on the limb where it was getting a little ridiculous, where people were showing their cat walking by and thinking that it was a ghost, and So things were really kind of a stretch. So I kind of had to put the brakes on it because there was too much speculation and not enough. You're dealing with a subject that in itself is a little bit obscure, but some of the stuff that was, you know, too much about investigations, which to me, I've seen ghost hunters and all these things, and I think most of it's a bunch of bunk. I'm sorry, all you ghost hunter fans, but something squeaking or a floorboard or something like that, unless I see a full apparition on one of these shows, I've had it with that. So, and there was getting to be too much of that, too much investigation stuff, and it's like, okay, you know, show me something. But if you're going to show about creaks and groans and stuff like that, or somebody dropping a microphone, it's like, you know, I'm bored. So I was kind of discouraged that off from the group, I guess, and get back to, you know, come out with some good stories. And whether they're true or not, that's not important. If it's full four, that's cool. Something that's interesting. So
yeah, something to be used around a campfire, if I may say.
Exactly.
And you know, I feel you there, Bill. Like I have one too, just called like Haunted Vermont Sharing is Believing. Is the way I look at it, like I've always believed is like I tell people, like when it comes to paranormal, I can tell you flat out that I do believe in the paranormal, that there is something going on in that realm. However, when you start talking to me about cryptology, with like Bigfoot, Champ, stuff like that, I'm more like 60-40 on there. Like I want to believe, and but I feel like if I actually saw a Bigfoot or sighting of Champ or, you know, or whatever, I think I would be more apprehensive of believing a little bit more. So, but otherwise, you know, I could look at a photo or video and be like, oh, this is a great costume, you know?
Like, exactly.
And I hate to say that but you know, it's true. Like look how much, you know, like creature design had become over the last, 200 years, we'll just say, or 100 years, we'll just say really. And, you know, it's sad for me to say that, but at the same time, it's like until I see and have my own experience with a cryptid, then maybe I'll be like, okay, I'm more on the, you know, believer side.
Right. I mean, and the only creature that I've ever seen, and I have seen one, I've seen a Bigfoot, but he was on the Howard Stern show and he was from Newport, Vermont.
Oh, jeez.
Matter of fact, they interviewed me on the Howard Stern show about him one day. It was kind of funny.
Oh boy.
As far as I know, he's down in the Barrie area, terrorizing them down in that area these days. So that's about the only Bigfoot I've ever seen in Vermont. So
Nice. Yeah, and I know that as we cross the border into New York, we get the Bigfoot on the side of the road anyway, waving to us. So, you know,
exactly.
But yeah, I mean, I would like to believe that there is more out there, but, yeah, it's going to take me to really, really push myself over to the believable side, unfortunately. Like it's nice watching everybody and hearing everybody's, stories. And, you know, and I hate saying that too, because it's just like, some of these eyewitnesses that have, you know, have said they've seen it, and like the trauma and everything, the emotion that they bring out, like if this was all like, and I'm not trying to say like, I'm trying not to say like I'm putting everybody down, but you know, if these were all just actors on these type of shows, then they need to be shown on a lot more because of their performance. I may say.
Exactly.
But there is some where, you know, I listen to podcasts of like stuff about Dogman or Bigfoot or whatever. And like, even on there, you can tell like whatever they saw, it definitely upset them enough so that it basically made them never want to step in the woods again. And these people mm-hmm. used to love it. And I just find that kind of crazy and sad at the same time, because, you know, once you lose a piece of your life, as I may say, and it gets taken away from you because of this creature out in the woods or whatever happened, you know, even if it was like a weird man with a chainsaw running after you, you know, like that would change yeah. my perspective of everything anyway. But
exactly.
Yeah. And I don't know, maybe one day, Bill, you and I can like be more on the believer side one day.
Exactly. And, you know, and there's one story that somebody told me several years ago in the Bristol area, something about the red-eyed lady, which was on this road where it used to be a house of ill repute many years ago, and something about witchcraft or ghosts or something on this road caused a lot of accidents or whatever. But I tried to look into that, and I never came up with anything. But the guy I spoke with swore up and down that people knew about it, but I couldn't find anybody to elaborate on it. So, but those are the kind of things that get me interested. I hear something, and I want to hear more. And I think that's what Joe Citro does a lot, too. He hears things, and then he investigates whether it's a worthwhile story or not. So that's kind of the tough part is, you know, when you hear something that's kind of tantalizing, and then when you try to dig further, it's really limited as far as what you can dig up.
Oh, I see what you're getting at. Yeah, it's always good to hear the story, and then if it can be backed up by proof, whether it be a newspaper article or more than one person that has heard or seen, yeah, make the story more validated, maybe is the word I'm trying to think of. But anyway, that's like a couple stories that I used to hear. So in Chittenden, I don't know how familiar you are, Bill, with Vermont at all, but like Chittenden area.
Yeah, I haven't been around that area very often, no.
Well, there's a cemetery there off the road to your left that you're kind of going into town. It's called Baird or Bard Cemetery. I forget how you pronounce it. Mm-hmm. I've heard it both ways, and I still know what the people are talking about. So supposedly that cemetery had the story where if you drive by at a specific time in the night, one of the gravestones almost like is lit up. It's almost like there's some invisible light that lights up the gravestone. And I've never seen it. I've tried this theory yep. many times. So,
yeah, there's a lot of those kind of things, like Black Agnes in Montpelier and things like that. So, yeah, I know what you mean.
Oh, yeah, sitting on her lap, and then you, by sitting yeah. on her lap, you die within 7 days or something horrific happened to you.
Yeah, from what I've heard, a lot of stoners have been doing it, and they're still alive and smoking, so.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, too, so. Still, though, either way, like, that's a weird statue, and, oh, man, I know I'm trying to think of presentation, I guess, will be, for the lack of a better word in here, but where Black Agnes is, the presentation of that gravestone, you know, it is very interesting. And I actually went there last summer during like a pretty cloudy afternoon, and it was kind of rainy and stuff, and it is weird. Like, I will say that the statue does give off a really interesting feeling. Not like death or anything, but it just like, it does give off a weird feeling though. So there's gotta be something more with this story, yeah. or statue for
well,
sure.
Well, might have to be with the fact everybody calls it Black Agnes, but actually the dude looks like a lady. It's a guy.
Yeah.
Not
a guy,
not a woman. People nope. think they call it Black Agnes. They think it's a woman, but it's actually a man.
Yeah. Did you actually know that there's two other statues of supposedly like this Black Agnes elsewhere in the United States. The only one I can remember right now besides Vermont is the one in Illinois, apparently.
Yeah,
I know there's another one.
Yeah,
I kind of want to reach out to a friend of mine that lived in Illinois, and I keep forgetting. Maybe after this, I'll send him a message. But yeah, I would love to see their version of Black Agnes out there.
Yeah.
So I guess Bill is like, so not only are you sharing stories on like the Vermonter and stuff, but you also have these almost like a book series, I think is the way you put it, like a Vermont mm-hmm. book series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, I was approached years ago by a company a publishing company that was doing these forgotten tales of books. And it was back when I had no idea how to write a book or anything like that. And they kind of talked me into it, I guess, because Joe Citro was smart enough not to get involved in it. So it was called History Press. And I think he mentioned that they approached him, but he said no. But I kind of got sucked into it. And I thought, oh, this would be great. You know, I've got a book. When I found that I had to put something together, I had a tougher time than I thought trying to come up with some ideas and things to put in it. So it's still up there. It's available. I think it's on Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, and so forth. And it's got some odd, quirky stories in there, not all supernatural related, but a lot of really, you know, kind of just offbeat stuff. But the really funny thing is, one of the articles that I didn't even know, I didn't even realize it, but I'd written one article that I found in a newspaper from down in the Rutland area. It was about a guy and his wife that were having some kind of dispute or something, and turned out that the guy was like my great-grandfather. And
oh, wow.
My mother said, did you know you wrote about your great-grandfather? And I said, no, I didn't. But That was kind of interesting. So so there's that book, and then later on, and when I did that book, I was kind of being under the pressure of the publishing company to do this, do that, come up with this. So after that experience, I said, well, I'm going to just do it myself. So I did a Kindle book called Haunted Vermont. I took some of the stories from that, plus some newer stories, and put it in. And I'm actually thinking of revising that and expanding upon it this year. So I'm hoping, depending on the situation here, the way things are going this year and the economy and everything, that perhaps if I have time, I want to expand upon that and have it ready for this Halloween, an expanded version. So that'll be coming, and that's available on Amazon too, either as a Kindle book or a print book that you can order. So that's kind of what I've been doing, what I've got going on. So
nice. Yeah, it's another good way to keep the stories alive, because if we just keep telling them and don't write them down, then eventually they're just going to be forgotten tales. And it'd be nice to keep some of these, like, at least the interesting ones. I mean, we can keep them alive for when our granddaughters and grandchildren, whatever. Yeah. So,
yeah, exactly. I'm hoping someday my daughter picks up on this and keeps it alive. But and sometimes it keeps growing. For instance, the Hayden House out in Albany. I was interested in that way back in like 1976 when I was in high school, and I heard that story. And as a class project, I went with a couple other guys. We went out to interview the last living descendant of that family. His name was Dwight Dow.
Oh, wow.
And we went out to talk to him, and he was a sprightly old guy with his own view of it. And he was totally, it was all bunk and all this, and who told you that? And he was pretty funny, but he said it was all a bunch of baloney. But yet, 10 years after that, I interviewed another lady out in that area that said that she used to stay there when she was a kid, and that she was sitting in the living room one day and saw some man come and sit down, and then he just kind of disappeared. And
wow.
So I added to that story on my website, and to this day, I mean, somebody else from up in the Albany area, Scott Wheeler, put me in touch with him, and I added his account. So that's a story. It's been growing and growing for many, many years, and I've helped perpetuate it myself over the years. So you never know. Wow. And that's the kind of thing I like doing. I like to just take these legends and things. But one thing I do want to emphasize, though, is it is a private home these days, and the people that live there now do not want to be bothered, and yet people go out and take pictures and try to ask if they can come in and look around and take pictures, and I guess the people are not happy with that at all. So that's another situation, sort of like the Hyde Manor, where, you know, people are getting a little bit too pushy and intruding upon other people's rights, and I really wish they wouldn't do that.
Yeah, no, I people need to stop doing that. But what we need to do, we just need to figure out a way to get them to stop doing that, which I don't know how we're gonna do that. But if that means curfew, security, even though security will be quite expensive, because it's not like we can have security cameras, because once people know where they are, you know, they're just easy to take down and never seen again. So then you're wasting money putting up security cameras. Yeah, there's always something going on. Kind of like, you know, going back to like Emily's Bridge. I went there and had our with my old paranormal group, and we had quite a bit going on that night when we went. We were testing theories out of what we've heard and stuff like that, like your car getting scratched, you getting scratched, stuff like that. And I ended up getting scratched and could not figure out how, because I wasn't like leaning up against the bridge or anything. I made sure I never touched the bridge like with my back. So wherever these mysterious marks came from had to have been from the bridge itself somewhere. So whatever it be from Emily or something else, I don't know. So I have my own stories for sure. But I mean, you know, going back afterward, hearing that there's now a curfew, there's like a $25 fine, which I'm like, sir, I'm like thinking to myself, that's it, like a $25 fine.
And I think Joe Citro debunked that story anyway, that apparently it was he found out that it was a school teacher just made up that story, and so it may be something totally different going on. If there are really something with that bridge, it might be something totally different. But apparently the story that everybody reads and believes is a total fabrication, I guess.
Yeah, that's what I've heard, but I find it very weird, like actually going there myself and experiencing what I saw. So there is something there, whether it be like a...
Right.
Like
it could be something else, yeah, but according to Joe, there's no Emily. That was all a story. But it could be something else. Yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess the reason why I say that is because, like, when we first got there, we were taking pictures, and we just happened to see we captured what seemed to be this lady in a gown almost pointing in the direction we just came. Mm-hmm. So we're like, okay, this is weird. And then later on, I snapped a couple of more photos, and one of the photos, it almost looked like there's like a tall male, kind of like in the middle of the bridge, kind of like he's sideways, and he's kind of turning his head like he's looking at us from his right side. And it you can definitely tell there's something there, because you can literally see the details of the face in the photo between the eyes and, like, almost like a smile, like, because it's almost like you could see teeth even. It was it's like incredible. So every time I hear or tell the story about my experience there, I always bring that up, because it's like, there's clearly not just a female spirit there. There's a male spirit there. So is he the one getting angry because people are thinking that he's Emily, or is there really like an Emily there? I mean, I don't know.
Yeah. Or it might be something else. Yeah, it might be just something that maybe the story was based on something. Who knows?
Yeah. So I always found that fascinating. I've also investigated Hubbardton Battlefield and the Hubbardton Battlefield like Cemetery. We've caught in some interesting stuff there. We did like a spirit box session there. I don't know if you're familiar with what a spirit box is, Bill.
Yeah, I've heard of it. Yeah.
Yeah. So for those listening, just to kind of clarify, so a spirit box is basically like an EVP, but in this case, instead of having it on your recorder and then you got to go home to listen to see what you got, in this case, in real time, you're going to get the response right then and there. So like if I ask for a name, that spirit, and a spirit come through the spirit box, I'll get it in real time. So anyway, we did a 20-minute session of a spirit box session around Hubbardton Battlefield, and we were walking around. So I was inviting spirits that were around to maybe come walk with us and talk with us. And at one point, we took a cigarette break. So I put my cigarette down, and I opened it up, and I actually put one down, like another extra cigarette out. And I was like, I think I said something basically like, if you would like to come have a smoke with us, feel free to bum one for me, basically. And the spirit box, came back with a response. And whoever it was asking if we had chew. So I looked around at everybody and I was like, does anybody even have chew? And of course, nobody had chew. So I was like, oh, I'm sorry. I guess we don't have chew. So I would say there's also something going on there at Hubbardton Battlefield for sure. Because one of the last EVPs I caught, and this is through actual EVP form. This is not even spirit box. But I was doing my research a little bit. Apparently, there was also Native Americans around that area as well during the battle of some sort, and they were being captured, or if they weren't already captured. But anyway, so I went to this very specific part of the field. I don't know why, but I wanted to go there by myself while everybody else went up the hill. So basically I couldn't have them in the background and basically destroy the audio. And one of the last questions I asked was, I basically said, were you scared? Meaning like, you know, like I was trying to say it as in like a soldier form, or if there was like somebody who was captive. And the strangest response I ever got, and I'm still trying to figure this one out, and I'm wondering if it had to have been a Indian, because I don't think there was any females in the army at the time, as far as I know. But I got this response that basically it was a female voice that said yes to that question, that this spirit was scared. And that blew my mind, because the other thing that I thought was really interesting about this response is that throughout the audio, you can hear like the sounds of the crickets and stuff. But when this response came through, it was almost like this entity had enough energy to kind of quiet the cricket just so she could be heard. So I have put tons of interesting stories, Bill. So but I guess, Bill, before we kind of wrap things up and stuff, just a little bit, is there any fascinating stories that you have that you would like to share that you've heard? Like, is there any favorite one that you like?
Oh, that's like asking what's your favorite kid, I guess. There's so many interesting things, it would be hard to pick one. And But I guess the ones I'm most fascinated by is the story of the grave in New Haven, where the guy, Dr. Timothy Smith, had himself buried with a bell and a chisel and underneath the glass and all that. That one I've always kind of found a bit fascinating. And of course, along with the Hayden House and a lot of the other ones. So it's kind of hard to pick my favorite, I guess.
Yeah, I actually just visited Timothy Clark Smith's grave last year, actually, and what a interesting sight. And then I actually got out of work early last week, I think it was, and we went back to take some pictures again. So yeah, that place is always fascinating with the window with a grave. Cool. Oh yeah, definitely. Now, mm-hmm. I've been asked this, so I'm curious, Bill. You've been there, I'm assuming, to the window in the grave. Anyway, so I've been asked, have you heard any sounds of, like, a bell?
No, never. It's always nice and quiet there. All I hear is the wind since I've been there.
Yeah, same. It's either the wind or the noisy traffic from the road that I hear.
Right.
I still haven't heard a bell. Maybe one day, though. Maybe one day.
Yeah. And then the other place I was always kind of fascinated with was the Dutton House at Shelburne Museum, because I used to live across the street from there. So I used to go over there almost every day. And I would go in there, and I never heard or saw anything in there the many, many times that I've been in the Dutton House. So I've been all over that museum. I've been in the museum so many times, I know it better than a lot of the people that they'd hire to kind of act as guides. I'd walk in and I'd know more about what was going on than they did. So I was over there way too much. but hey, if you live across the street in the Shelburne Museum, you'd be crazy not to be over there all the time. So.
That's true. That's like, you know, I live not too far from Wilson Castle, so, and I like to go there every now and then, too, because I like that place. So, yeah. All right, Bill, so what we'll do is we'll wrap things up. It was a pleasure to talk to you. So for those that are listening, where can people keep up to date with your work and everything haunted stores, I guess?
Well, pretty much the gateway to everything is my website, Vermonter.com, and through there you can navigate to the Vermonter.com Facebook page or the Haunted Vermont Paranormal Group or Ghost Story Group or whatever you'd like to imagine it as, I guess. So that's where I can be found, and I'm always looking for new stories. I'm always looking for new information to add to stories that are already there, and that's about it, just to kind of keep the fun going and hoping that everybody has a good time with it.
Well, Bill, I appreciate your time as well for talking with me, and I wish you the best of all more 25 more years to come for Vermonter.
Well, I hope so. Otherwise, I might be on the other side stirring some stuff up.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, now that you just brought that up, that reminded me of a question real quick. So another question that I got told or asked is, so when my time comes and stuff, are you going, so what's your goal going to be? Are you going to haunt specific people, or are you just going to go around and visit places? And I said, well, depending on who is alive when I pass, I would definitely want to haunt the crap out of them.
I think if that was the case, if I came back, I'd be probably a practical joker, I guess.
Yeah, a trickster. Yeah, I would still be a trickster. Yeah.
Yeah, I might as well keep it fun, right?
Hey, you gotta, right?
I don't want to scare anybody, but it'd be nice to make them laugh or irritate them a little bit.
Oh, yeah, for sure. It would be nice to mess around with taking their car keys and putting it somewhere else.
Exactly. Yeah.
All right. So just real quick. So Vermonter.com, where you can find everything and everything for Haunted Vermont related, as we discussed in this little podcast episode. And Bill, it's always a pleasure. And if you ever can think of anything that you would like to share, please feel free to contact me again and we'll set something up so we can share whatever.
Sounds good.
All right, oh, Bill. Thanks. Well, thank you. And for everybody else listening, please make sure to keep your eyes open, because you just never know when an apparition is going to appear in front of you.